Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Well, good evening and welcome to the tennis show here on Love Sport Radio. Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow this evening. The poor soul's got a sore throat, so we've given him the evening off. He's a very, very hard-working man. Johnny, rest up, get some Lemsip, get some sleep, and you will be back on the Love Sport airways, I'm sure, very, very soon indeed. So in our tennis show this evening, a whole host of things to talk about. It's been a mega week with the countdown to Wimbledon. Oh, counting down, incredibly close indeed. We've also got Queens to talk about from the past week, and Eastbourne is very much ongoing. Joined in the studio by Anna Smith. Anna, good evening.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right. Is your voice all right?
Yeah, I think I'm coming down with something as
no,
well.
No, don't bring it in.
I know, I'm trying not to infect you as well.
Yeah, please don't. I do need the voice, as does Johnny. So look, it's been a mega week. So much going on. As a tennis player yourself, how almost frustrating is it a little bit, or is it exciting kind of this time of year for you when all these tournaments are happening right here on our doorstep?
I suppose on a personal level, it's frustrating. I'd obviously love to be out there, but in terms of just being a tennis fan, it's amazing having tennis at home. I was lucky enough to get to go to Roehampton yesterday to see some of the qualies, and it's so nice to just see the people watching, being on the grass courts, and yeah, I loved it.
And for you, is grass courts, are they the one? Is that the surface?
Yeah. I suppose I'm a bit biased, obviously.
Well, you're allowed to be.
Yeah. No, grass has always been my favourite. There's just something special about it. I think it's just not quite like anything. There's just like this aura about it, and I don't know what it is, but for me, I just think grass is the best.
No, and I agree. You're going to be heading down to Wimbledon?
Oh, I don't know. I want to, but it's just like so depressing. No, I think I'll probably try and go down a little bit if I can.
Have you got anyone in particular you could be sat courtside cheering on? Mates in tennis? Ooh, come on.
I suppose just all the British girls. I'm lucky enough to know them quite well, so I'll obviously be cheering them on. And I think they can do well as well. So yeah, I'll definitely be flying the British flag when I'm watching them.
I suppose it is a little bit different for you because you are, you know, a doubles player. But in general, tennis, it strikes me as it can be a bit of a lonely existence. You know, not only like on court as a player, but just in general, you're travelling kind of round the world constantly. And I presume living in hotels with probably your coaching team and whatnot. And as I say, when you're on the court, it's a very, very much on your own, isn't it? It's sink or swim. What is it kind of like then between you British girls? Is there a kind of sense of camaraderie? And if so, when do you actually see each other and spend any quality time together?
Yeah, I suppose being a tennis player is a very strange existence. It's not really kind of like any regular job, and I guess maybe any sports people can relate to it. But it is very lonely, like you say. You know, most of the time you're travelling around with a coach. Sometimes you're travelling around on your own, and you just kind of have to live in hotel rooms, you know, go to restaurants on your own. All you do is like eat, sleep, play tennis, and do exactly the same again. So it's quite a strange way to live. But I guess we're so used to it now. I've been doing it since I was 16, so 14 years. It's weird, but you know, you obviously get time to see them at the tournaments. We have a lot of kind of downtime in between practices and matches and things like that, and then obviously go to dinner and things like that. But then at the same time, they're your competitors as well. So it's trying to find that balance between being friendly but knowing that the next day you could be on court next to them competing against them. So it's hard, but you know, I suppose playing Fed Cup with them as well has, you know, it brings you closer together, so you do get to form quite a good bond with them. So you kind of can overlook that as well, and you do become friends.
Okay, well, up until 8 p.m. this evening, we'll hear from Andy Murray, hear from Jamie Murray, we'll hear from Ross Sattar as well. She's been down at Eastbourne hoping to speak to Simona Halep, by the way. We should get her on the on the air, on the radio, in around 10 or so minutes' time, and then talk about kind of the drama, I suppose, with Wimbledon. They had the seedings already, which has caused up a bit of a stir. Before we get into any of that, Anna, apologies if you've done this chat with Johnny or you're sick of doing it in general. But the reason why you are here at the moment is because you are injured,
yes.
Which is obviously not a nice thing. What is the situation with it?
Good question. So I had surgery on both my knees last July. I had to have some cartilage cleaned out, and then also I had to have them microfractured, so they drilled little holes in the back of my kneecaps. So that was initially the problem to start
with. First of all,
did
that hurt? Is that a silly question?
No, sir.
It sounds if someone was to drill in the back of my kneecaps, that wouldn't be a pleasant experience.
No, surprisingly, they're just quite swollen. But no, it was surprisingly okay. The surgeon did an amazing job. So I've been rehabbing for that since obviously July last year, and then unfortunately I had to have another surgery about 4 weeks ago. I managed to somehow break off some cartilage that was floating around as well, so I had to have that taken out and then shaved down. But
God, no, honestly, I'm proper I hate that.
Oh, you're a bit squeamish.
Shaving of the cartilage,
yeah
if that doesn't make anyone's insides slightly just quiver a little bit.
I know, it wasn't pleasant. It was like the size of like a fingernail.
That's,
I think,
enough.
Yeah,
I'm regretting asking now.
I know, I probably shouldn't have gone into so much detail, but he had to, I had the same surgeon again. He had to take that out and then shave it down again, so hopefully the rehab will pay off, and maybe tournaments in September is the plan.
So are you able to get out on a court at all at the moment, or is it still very much doing the doctor's orders, doing your exercises and trying your best to do the rehab?
Yeah, pretty much at the moment it's still gym based stuff. So it's like 3 gym sessions a day, normally bike, a physio session, and then followed by weights, is pretty much the schedule at the moment. And then I'm hoping in the next sort of week or so that I'll be able to get back on court and do like static hitting, and then kind of work my way back into it. But just kind of taking it a week at a time and seeing how things progress.
Is this the longest time you've been out away from? No,
I wish it was. I was out for 2 years between, I think I was about 21 to 23. I had 2 foot operations, both my knees, and then another foot. So I've had quite a few injuries, unfortunately.
Oh dear.
At least sport's bad for you.
Yeah, and you were just saying it's quite incredible, isn't it, that as healthy and as brilliant as sport is, at the same time for you professional athletes, it takes a huge toll on the body, doesn't it?
I don't think anyone quite kind of warns you that. Everyone always says, oh, exercise is good for you, but
it is
in moderation. I've realized I think if you do elite sport, it's actually, you know, it's really tough, and tennis is, I guess, maybe one of the tough ones, just purely because
it's brutal, every
joint, every muscle is used from head to toe. There's no sort of warning when you start that's part of it. You look at like Andy needing almost a hip replacement at the age of 32. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Andy, shall we? It is pretty miraculous. I mean, cast your mind back to the Australian Open. I remember watching it in tears, the video, everything. We were saying goodbye to Andy Murray. That's what it felt like.
Yeah.
Anyway, and wonderfully, it's not been the case. He's back out on the tennis court, and not only back out on the tennis court, but he's just won himself another title. I mean, is it a sporting miracle, the fact that Andy Murray is out there and playing tennis like the way he is?
I don't think it's a miracle, because you look at Andy and what he's achieved in his career and how determined he is and how hardworking he is. So in that sense, I don't think it's a surprise. Maybe medically it could be a surprise, but I guess you look at what, I can't remember which, Brian brother, Mike or Bob.
Yeah, I can't remember which one. They're twins.
Yeah, it's a struggle to tell them apart. They both play tennis. But yeah, you know, if you look at it in that sense, obviously medically it is amazing what he's managed to achieve. But if you look at him as a person, I'm not surprised that he's made a comeback. And it wouldn't surprise me if he came back in singles and did really well.
But that hip, though, again, you talk about the brutality almost and the demand on the body of tennis. Again, you're thinking of the way that a tennis player plays. There's a lot of stress on the hip. I mean, I think about it, and there's not a huge amount of muscle areas and joints where there's not stress, but the hip's a huge one, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that must have been incredibly painful for him to initially to have. and then to make the decision to have the surgery. But he's saying he's completely pain-free.
Yeah, the surgeon obviously did an amazing job, but you know, you look at how he was before the surgery and it was almost painful just looking at him walk, the way he was kind of like pigeon-toed and limping around. Mm. And you were just like, obviously he struggled with his just general quality of life and playing with his children and things like that. And that's just not really a way to live. And obviously then I guess tennis becomes a little bit secondary to that. You know, you want to have a quality of life. Tennis isn't going to be there forever. So for him, I guess it was a big decision in terms of his career, but also just, you know, life in general. So I think it was the best decision for him, but then also, you know, he had to look at what else was important to him. And obviously, I guess maybe he's a bit more relaxed now because he thought he potentially had to retire. So maybe it was like a blessing in disguise almost.
Yeah, we can hear from Andy Murray following the Queen's win. And he's been talking about kind of not wanting to rush back and obviously the ultimate game, the goal of playing singles again.
If it happens in September or next year or in 6 weeks, I really don't mind. Like, genuinely, I do not mind. Like, I'm happy playing tennis and training and having no pain anymore.
Yeah, and that's the thing we're saying, playing completely pain-free. And we can hear from, again, talking about the Queen's victory. It was miraculous. And, I mean, the guy's achieved some pretty great things in tennis. But this is what Andy was saying in terms of where this one ranked in his all-time career success.
This is very different for me, and it's more special than a lot of the singles tournaments that I've won for a lot of different reasons. I just won the doubles here with a metal hip. It's mental.
Yeah, Andy Murray there speaking following that Queen's success. And it is something, isn't it, to remember? This is a guy who's won Grand Slams. He's played in countless Grand Slam finals. But the age of 32, little old Queens, I know it's obviously not, but you know, he's saying that this one is pretty special to him.
Yeah, I'm not surprised that it is. You know, he's obviously had so much success there in the past, you know, being a five-time champion. But coming back when, you know, he didn't think he would be able to, and coming back at home and having the crowd support, I think, you know, his friends and family were able to be there as well. It's a massive thing. And you could kind of see the emotion throughout the week. I watched a few of his matches and you could just see the how happy he was to be back on the court, and it was just so nice to see that. And you know, he didn't mind that, I suppose, you know, saying it was just doubles, but you know, it was just so nice to see him be so happy being back on the court.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we're going to take a break. Still loads to talk about from Queens, by the way. I haven't even mentioned Feliciano Lopez. I mean, if you talk about the miracle almost of Andy Murray, not far off, similar in terms of what Feliciano Lopez did, doing the clean sweep at the grand old age of 37. Pretty special. But when we come back, we're going to speak to Ross Sattar. She's been down at Eastbourne today. By the way, Kyle Edmund has beaten Cam Norrie today in straight sets, 6-2, 6-2.
This is Love Sport.
It is Love Sport, and this is the tennis show here on Love Sport. Jake Watson in for Johnny Burrow this evening, joined in the studio by Anna Smith. But also, we've got the lovely Ross Sattar on the phone. Good evening, Ross.
Hello.
How are you? Long time no speak.
I know. We could catch up, but we ought not to.
Okay, let's talk tennis. What have you been up to today? Who've been speaking to?
I have been speaking to lots of people. It's been quite a busy day, actually. So I've had a little bit of a natter with Angie Kerber, with Kiki Bertens, with Simona Halep. Let's see, who else have we had a bit of a natter with?
Drop some more names. Yeah.
Waiting to see when Kyle Edmund comes into press, because he's just finished. Picked up a good win against Cameron Norrie. I spoke to him yesterday. I've just been nattering with everybody.
You do love a natter. So look, what are the big headlines then from today's tournament?
Well, the biggest headline, of course, is Jo Konta going out. She was beaten soundly by Ons Jabeur in what was actually a really, really entertaining match. Looked like Jo was going to do really well, broke Jabeur early, and then she just caught light. Some crazy angles. It was highly entertaining. You know, Jo just had to admit that she was beaten by the better player. Ironically, Ons Jabeur really admires Jo, sort of sees her as an inspiration. So I'm never quite sure what it means when you sort of beat your inspirational god, really. But there you go.
But what it means, obviously, you've been watching closely enough. But I have to say, Roz, I mean, Jo's been in great form, hasn't she, as of late? And I have to admit, and forgive my ignorance, I've never heard of Ons Jabeur. Is this a big shock today?
Yes and no. I mean, Jabeur's a decent player and sort of did quite well towards the tail end of last year. She just needs that consistency, but when she does catch fire, she can be very tricky. Lots of variety in her game, quite unpredictable. I mean, she was just finding the corners. There was nothing that she couldn't do today. It was good stuff.
Yeah, and Simona Halep, you've just been speaking to, she's through.
She is. She's playing singles and doubles, so it's quite a busy day for Halep. Grass might not necessarily be her favourite surface. I think that the rolling of her ankle that she did in the semi-final against Jeannie Bouchard a few years ago still kind of sticks in her mind a little bit. But there's no reason why Halep can't do well on grass.
Yeah, well, she's obviously, of course, a former world number one. But as you mentioned, grass really isn't her strongest, is it? I mean, you look at her other successes over the big Grand Slams. Wimbledon's always been the one, hasn't it, where she's not really quite ever done it.
No, I mean, she's never really sort of come close after that particular semi-final, I think. And I think, and it's the same with Jabeur, actually. She said that she'd had a bad fall at Wimbledon, and for a while it kind of stuck with her. So there's a lot of players. I mean, Kiki Bertens was saying the same thing, that, you know, grass, she described it as they're working things out. They're friends. They're not quite dating, but, you know, they're getting along okay. But, you know, it might not be long before one of them flounces out the restaurant.
Anna, experienced anything like that?
I had a pretty bad fall on grass once, and it definitely does stick in your mind. I can understand why the girls are a bit apprehensive, you know, obviously, especially when the courts are quite lush as well. I guess it's makes it a little bit more slippery out there.
Yeah, that's the feeling that I get. I mean, Halep described it as, you know, a clay, she can understand how to slide, whereas obviously you can't slide as much on grass. The groundsmen come after you with butterfly nets if you try and do stuff like that. So, you know, and like you say, when the grass is quite new and lush, which it will be by the time they get to Wimbledon, it can be a little bit ice rinky. But ironically, the same is true of clay for a number of players. If they haven't learnt how to slide on clay, they find it quite precarious. So it's a tricky time of year, actually. These two slams are a really good leveller, I think.
Yeah, well, someone who has learnt to slide on clay, Ash Barty, of course, winning the French Open earlier on in the year. She is now the new women's number one.
I watched her winning in Birmingham. I mean, you couldn't imagine a nicer player for it to happen to. You know, she's still only young, but she's got this amazing perspective now, having left the sport, burnt out, and then come back to it. I think I don't think we're going to see her suffering from the same kind of self-imposed stress as we've seen from Naomi Osaka. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. I think Osaka is going to come back stronger. But I think Barty will just handle this like water off a duck's back.
Yeah, so what is the story then? Could you talk about Ash and her successes, particularly in doubles and earlier on? She is still incredibly young, but almost a little bit come out of nowhere to take this world number one, still kind of waiting, other than the big French Open, some serious successes at these Grand Slams.
Yeah, I think she was building up to it, though. I mean, prior to that, she won Miami, which was up until the French Open, her biggest career title. And I think that was like a kind of foretelling of what was to come. But I mean, you know, it just feels like everything has come together. We got to talk to her coach, Craig Tizer, and he was saying that when she came back, he worked her hard. And it was like, you know, you need to prove to me that you're ready. And that you actually understand it. And they built in, like, I think 4 training blocks and, you know, interspersed a few tournaments here and there, you know, and he worked her hard. Mm. This hasn't just been a miraculous thing. I think it's been a 3-year progression. And I think when she came back, she was like, yep, I'm ready for this now. I wasn't ready before. I'm ready for it now.
Yeah, forgive me if I'm wrong. I don't think she's ever in the singles gone to the second week, has she, at Wimbledon? Are we expecting hopeful, well, now she's got this number one title, number one ranking, she'll be expected, certainly, won't she, to push on to these latter stages at Wimbledon this year?
I think she will. Actually, you know, I think last year she said, every week of play is a week closer to grass. I think she might have changed her mind about that a bit this year. But, you know, grass is a surface that, you know, does suit her game. The pressure will be on her because she will be the top seed for the first time at a Grand Slam. And it will be interesting to see how she deals with it. But, you know, hey, she won Birmingham. She loves the surface. And if the draw falls right for her, Who knows?
Yeah, I always find the women's side incredibly hard to predict, but I'm going to ask you to do it, Ros, because you are the expert. other than Ash, who are we expecting to really go far in Wimbledon this year? I've got a couple of quid I might stick on.
I would definitely look at Kerber. She's been very good this week, and she reached, I think, the semi-finals in Mallorca as well. And she also knows now what it's like to defend the slam. Again, I think when she defended her two titles in Australia and New York, you know, it was all a bit overwhelming. And I think she's a little bit older and wiser. If Muguruza is fit, I would keep an eye on her. She was impressive for a spell in France. I would definitely keep my eye on her. I don't think you can rule out Serena Williams, but because she's had no practice, I don't think. I think it's just going to be a roller coaster for her.
Yeah.
I don't know, Anna. Who else would you reckon?
I probably would say Kvitova if she's fit. Yeah. First of all, I don't know. I saw a picture of her practicing, so I don't know if she's definitely going to play or not. I don't know if you've heard anything.
I've seen the same picture as you that she hit for the first time, which I think is quite good because she wanted to come back for Birmingham and Eastbourne and couldn't, wasn't ready. So hopefully if she does come back, and maybe if the pressure's off her, it might do well for her.
She's also got such good memories, obviously, being a past champion as well. And I think grass is a surface that suits her game so well. So if she can get a couple of matches in, I think she's always dangerous.
Yeah.
But
I'm just trying to think who else.
I mean, Osaka, if she catches fire, you know, she's got the game for it. She's got the power. And obviously we've seen in previous years that most of the time the winners have been big ball strikers.
Yep. Yeah, I'm just curious because, I mean, in Birmingham, she came out at loss and basically declined to do press, which is very rare for Osaka. You know, if they decline to do press, obviously they get a, you know, the process is they get a fine from the WTA. It was a very rare thing for her. It's not something that she does. So I'm going to be interested to see how she gets in because she's another one that seems to have this mental block about the grass at the moment.
Yeah. Ros, you've just been speaking, haven't you, to Cameron Norrie. He's just come off court, losing today to Kyle Edmund, 6-2, 6-2. What's the story of that one?
Well, I spoke to him actually yesterday and he was looking forward to it, but he's had a bit of an up and down year as well. Things hadn't sort of really gone to plan. He had a, you know, lightning year last year, rose up the rankings very quickly. He's changed his attitude a little bit on grass, decided to be a little bit more accepting of the fact that, you know, you get dinks and bad bounces and that it's not always going to be perfect. And that seems to have sort of helped him, but it was a good win from Kyle today, actually, because he hasn't. I think he's lost 7 out of his last 8 games, so it's not been great for Kyle. So a win should cheer him up a little.
Yeah. What is the story with Kyle? Because it feels for your kind of armchair tennis fans, we see kind of and hear of Kyle Edmund kind of almost a little bit sporadically following Murray's not downfall, obviously, but injury. There was this great hope, wasn't there, with Kyle that he would kind of step up and take that mantle. He was in and around the world's top 10. He's not there at the moment. You mentioned, you know, that run of defeats. What has gone on with Kyle's year? Has it been injury? Has it been loss of form? What's been going on with Kyle?
A little bit of both. He had a knee injury that sort of kept him out a little bit. Then he took some time out. He lost his coach. His coach decided to retire. And his coach had been pivotal to his rise last year. And then he basically came back and did the Indian Wells Challenger, won that, and I think reached the third or fourth round of Indian Wells, fourth round I think it was, where he met Roger Federer and went out. But he had a good big winning streak. I think he, you know, went on to reach the third round of Miami. And then after that, on clay, which is his favourite surface, he got one win and it was an unmitigated disaster. You know, and this is a surface that he likes and responds well to. He drew Tsitsipas in his first grass court tournament at Queens, and Tsitsipas at the moment can't do any wrong on any surface.
No.
So it was a tough, tough draw for him, but he looked pretty impressive today.
Yeah, and say with Murray and various other those dominant men from the past almost decade, you know, getting to that point now where their game isn't quite at the same level, we are seeing the likes of Tsitsipas, Zverev and team come through. Does Edmund have a game that was comparable to those boys to find himself? If he really finds some form and he really pushes on, he could be a top 10 player challenging at the back end of these Grand Slams?
Personally, I think he still needs a little bit more variety to his game. He's got a great sucker 1-2 punch good serve, and he can follow it in very well with a strong forehand. His backhand has improved. He can come to the net. There are all things that he can do. It's just he doesn't sort of do them with any consistency. So he could well do with working on that, whereas, you know, Tsitsipas can be all over the court, has got slice, he's got great feel at the net. So, you know, he's got some way to go to catch Tsitsipas' team and Zverev. I'd put Zverev in there. Yeah. For such a big unit, he's quite nimble and can actually, he's got quite good hands as well. So,
because we are desperate, aren't we, now for somebody to come through. We think of obviously the years at Wimbledon, the entire public, don't they? They really do get behind our British players, in particular the men. You think of, you know, Murray, Rosetsky and Hemman over the years. You know, it'd be great for Edmund to have a proper run and for him to get this backing, because it still feels that despite the fact that he is one of these top players, I think he's in around top 30 at the moment in the world, which is very impressive, significantly higher than, say, for instance, what Rosetsky was, and he was still getting massive support, that we really need Edmund, don't we, to kind of show a bit of personality, you know, go through and have a decent run at Wimbledon, and he can become kind of that next star in terms of, even if he's not winning it, but just somebody that the public really gets behind and supports.
Yeah, I think, again, he's a player that you want to catch fire. I mean, think back to when he reached the semi-final of the Australian Open, and he had it all. He had that fire in his belly, he had that fight, yeah, and he just never gave up. He needs to sort of tap back into that in the same way that Joe's sort of rediscovered how to battle and fight. And they do say that you have a breakout year, then you have like a wobble year, and then it's all about what you do in year three. Now we're seeing with Joe, she had a breakout year, she had a wobble year, and now she's sort of coming through that and really sort of kicking on. And we kind of need to see that with Kyle, really.
Yeah, it feels like the difficult second album, and now he's just coming back to the fore again. Ros, I've got to ask you about Feliciano Lopez. Naturally, we've been speaking loads about Andy, but I mean, how incredible was his performance at Queen at the ripe old age of 37?
Yeah, I mean, you know, grass is a surface that does suit him. He's won Eastbourne before, you know, I think he's even won Queens before. But yeah, that was an amazing run. And, you know, even, you know, when you consider how many matches they had to play in close succession.
Well, I think he was
in terrible weather.
Five consecutive games on the centre court, was it?
Yeah, I think they had like three in one day.
Yeah, it was three in one day. I think it was the last five games.
Yeah, so he did extraordinarily well. And I actually thought that the doubles final would be too much for him, but, you know, he proved everybody wrong. So, yeah, it's fantastic. I think he deserves every accolade going.
Yeah, and he has always had, hasn't he, a good relationship with the British fans, because he says for years he's always kind of played on grass, and he's a very likeable character. But any explanation as into why we're seeing these men, particularly, you know, Feliciano, we talk about Roger as well, being able to kind of go on, not in kind of just their 30s, but, you know, they're going on to their late 30s now?
Yeah, I think it's all down to sort of choosing their schedule. I mean, obviously, Roger's made no secret that he's skipped the clay like several years in a row. And I think that's very much held in the longevity of his game. You know, Lopez, maybe not as much, but, you know, he's winding down what he does, and it's showing. I think even Nadal has admitted that he has to wind down his schedule to be able to keep going, if he wants to keep going and sort of catch Roger. I mean, let's face it, it came as a shock to everybody when Djokovic went out, but even more of a shock that Nadal is now just two slams away from equaling Roger Federer.
Ros, absolute pleasure speaking to you as always. We'll let you get back to your interviews, and we'll speak to you hopefully very, very soon.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Cheers. There we are. That's Ros Sadar, tennis correspondent down at Eastbourne today, hoping to speak to a couple more players down there. She will, of course, feature very heavily across Love Sport over the next few weeks with all this tennis coverage. We're going to take a break. Then when we come back, myself and Anna, we'll talk about Wimbledon. We've had the seedings announced today. A particular player, namely Nadal, not too chuffed with that news today. We'll do that next here on Tennis Show on Love Sport.
This is Love Sport.
Well, cheers to Ros. Lovely speaking to her. She's been down at Eastbourne today. She's been speaking to Simone Halep. She said she spoke to Cam Norrie yesterday, hoping to speak to Carl Edmund. The news today, he has won his game against Cameron Norrie, won in straight sets 6-2, 6-2. It would be great, wouldn't it, to see Kyle push on? Because it does feel strange, Anna, that, as I said, with Greg, he obviously had the US Open, didn't he, that run? But other than that, he never really had any particular success, did he? It almost felt like he was off the back of Henman. You know, you had these two British players. And for me, Kyle is as good, if not better, than what some of those other past players have been. But it just does feel like the public have ever really kind of got behind him.
I think maybe Kyle, just purely because he's quite quiet.
Yeah,
he's quite,
do you think that's what it is?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's easier to kind of get behind someone who maybe has slightly got a bigger personality. Mm. He's always been quite shy and not necessarily liked the limelight. And obviously it's been hard for him to kind of take over the mantle from Andy and be the number one. So I think it's probably just taken him a little while to get used to that limelight and have more attention on him, and obviously making that run at the semi-final of Australia was a big thing for him.
And yeah, obviously... I remember I got up and watched it, and I was, you know, he obviously didn't go particularly well on the day, but an incredible run. And again, I remember all those years. What did Murray make it, 5 times into the final of the Aussie Open? Yeah. The amount of times I got up in the blooming middle of the night to watch Andy play, and you know, I want to do that for Kyle Edmund. I want him to be a top 10 player when he heads into these tournaments, and thinking, you know, that there's a chance. At the moment, you're kind of thinking like he's got a good game, and he's got one of those wins in him, but you just don't feel that perhaps, you know, there's that belief within himself that he could go on and win a Grand Slam. Do you think that will come, or do you think sometimes you can tell within someone that the makeup that they're going to be eventual Grand Slam winner?
I think he does have the potential. I think obviously he's shown that you don't make a Grand Slam semi-final without having the potential. I think it's just a little bit maybe the mindset. Obviously he's had a bit of a tough few months with injuries and you know, lack of matches and things like that. And I think if, you know, if he can just get on a bit of a run, I think he's very much a confidence player. And if he can string a few matches together, string a few wins, just stay healthy for a prolonged period of time, I think that'll make a massive difference. He's obviously had his coach stop working with him for because he retired. So that was a massive thing for him as well. You know, they'd obviously had a lot of success together. So, you know, he's had a few changes and a few ups and downs, and it's kind of probably makes him stronger once he gets out the other side of it. It's tough. It's just some of the kind of ups and downs of tennis, unfortunately.
Yeah. No, absolutely. But it feels like a particularly pivotal year, you know, because of Andy not going to be in the singles. You know, he has got an opportunity, hasn't he? If he gets into the second week, you know, if he has just one of those standout games. I'm thinking, you know, up against, you know, one of the top seeds, it goes to a 5-set, an absolute thriller, and it just captures the imagination of the British public. I feel that's what he needs.
Yeah, I think sometimes it just takes, you know, one match to really kickstart your year. You know, if you can have a great win against a big player on centre court and with the crowd right behind you, you know, something can change and something can just click inside you. So, you know, if he can, I think it's obviously, I think it'll be good that Dan Evans has been doing well as well. Kind of maybe takes the pressure off him a little bit more. Yeah. Kind of divides the attention a little bit. So I think if, you know, if they can have a little bit of luck in the draw, you know, not get a big name first round, I think both of them could do well. And I think once they have the home support, like, you never know what can happen.
Mm, yeah, a huge amount, though, as you say, on the luck of the draw, if he ends up getting, you know, a horrendous side or someone in the second round. But yeah, you mentioned Dan Evans also beating Cameron Norrie today. It is good, isn't it? It felt for years, again, there was no one. If another bloke was in the top 100, it was deemed as, oh, hang about, someone's on the rise. But you've got Kyle in around 30s. He's been in the top 10. Cameron Norrie, was he 30 in the world? Again, feel like going under the radar massively.
Yeah, I think, I would say both of them.
In the men's game, to be in, I've always thought, if you're a top 50 men's player in the world, you're a flipping good player.
I'd say top 100, top 150. Yeah. I think men's tennis
The depth is incredible.
Yeah, it's underrated. You know, I've been watching some of the qualifying at Roehampton, and you see the guys playing who are even, you know, close to 200. Their level of tennis is amazing, and I don't think they get the recognition they deserve. So the strength in depth is phenomenal in men's tennis. It makes you realise how good, you know, the likes of Djokovic, Federer, Andy and those kind of guys are. But, you know, it's so nice to have a few guys, British guys, obviously, top 50. Yeah. And then I think Dan's very close to top 50 as well after his great grass court season, which is obviously continuing in Eastbourne. So, you know, I think it's exciting. And any time you're obviously at a home slam, you can just use the energy and feed off the crowd a little bit. And I know those guys enjoy playing in front of a home crowd. So, you know, I feel like...
Of course they do.
They can use that to their advantage.
You mean surprised by Dan Evans? Because he's had to go literally from the bottom again, hasn't he? And he feels like, it gets the impression that he's not far from kind of where he was before the ban.
No, I think... Oh, I saw an interview with him, and I think he's saying that he's almost playing better tennis than he did before he got banned. But, you know, I've seen him quite a lot, and I think we're very similar ages. So I've seen him, I've seen what he can do, and I know his game, and I know how competitive he is, and I know he realizes he obviously made a mistake with everything that happened, but he has the game and he has the talent and he's just so competitive. So there was, I didn't have that much doubt in my mind that he'd be able to get back to where he is now. And I think he can progress even further than he did before.
I mean, naturally, it's never the way anybody wants to go about things, getting banned for what he was. But you think in it in a rather strange way. It's almost given him a new lease of life, a new motivation to push on and be the best player he can ultimately be. Because he, by all accounts, you listen to him and you read stuff, that he has changed in terms of his lifestyle. It's not just, you know, what he was banned for, but also just the lifestyle in general, the partying and the drinking, which is completely normal for a man in his 20s to do, who's clearly kind of making a decent living out of tennis. But now it feels that obviously he had the ban, he's come back and it's like, oh, actually, you know, Dan, you're kind of not limited years, but you're on the back end, shall we say, now out of your tennis career, and it's time to kind of make the absolute most of it.
Yeah, I think with probably in Dan's case, you know, it just maybe took a little bit of maturing. He probably matured later on.
And as men, we mature sometimes at different times. Yeah. I'm still waiting for it. It'll come, hopefully.
No, I think he, you know, he was one of those guys, and he'll freely admit that, you know, he used to go out a lot. He probably wasn't as professional as he could be. But, you know, I think maybe the ban gave him, you know, the kind of the kick up the backside that he maybe needed to appreciate what he had and realise that, you know, he's kind of wasting his talent, which I think a lot of people have said, which is a shame because, you know, he has so much talent and he has the world at his feet when, you know, he's playing well. So I think how he's come back and how he's refocused and, you know, he's working really, really hard on his game and kind of has a new mentality, I think. So, you know, this is like a second chance that he's got and he's grabbing it with both hands.
Yeah. And what is the thought, belief from fellow pros, particularly in the British camp, on Dan? Because, again, over the years, you know, I've read things, I've seen spats with Jamie, hasn't he, talking about the doubles game in particular. He's always been outspoken, hasn't he, Dan? And you talk about how he's had this new lease of life, but is he particularly liked?
I mean, I don't know him overly well. I think, you know, he is a very outspoken character, which I think is,
which is nice in a way.
I was going to say it's quite a good thing
it's
for
refreshing,
the game.
Yeah,
you don't want kind of people who just don't say anything. It's quite nice to have a bit of a personality in the game. And I think people kind of either like him or hate him, kind of thing. But I like the fact that he's outspoken. You know, he says what's on his mind. I think it's a good thing. But yeah, obviously his little dispute with Jamie, but I don't think it means that they
dislike each other.
No, it's just a difference of
absolutely.
A difference of opinion, I think. But I think it's good. You know, some people, a lot of people say there aren't enough personalities in the game, and Dan is definitely one of those personalities. He kind of isn't too concerned whether people like him or not. He just goes out there and does what he needs to do, and it's working well for him at the moment.
Yeah, and a word on Joe then, very much flying the flag, isn't he, in the singles for your ladies. She's got the potential. She's been in great form, hasn't she? Again, we were speaking to Roz about, you know, how she kind of came to the fore and everyone's like, wow, you know, a British female tennis player is really pushing towards the top end of the world game. And then she kind of just really tailed off. And again, I think it's a big frustration with lots of tennis fans that happens quite a lot in the women's game, often for a whole variety of reasons that perhaps don't affect the men. But, you know, it can be incredibly topsy-turvy. And Jo fell off a little bit in terms of form-wise. But she seems to be, she not only coming back to form, I know she lost today, but timing it kind of the best time to do so.
Yeah, I think she's, you know, I think she's a very confident lady. She's very self-assured. She knows what she wants, and I think it was always a case of, you know, when, not if, she was going to come back. I think she's obviously shown, being I think number four in the world with her career high, you know, you don't lose that talent and the ability she has. It was just a case of, you know, I think she just lost a bit of confidence. You know, I think there's a lot of pressure on her to back up that year that she had, and also to, you know, deal with the expectation that she had of suddenly becoming number four in the world. It's a huge change.
Because everyone's had out to get you, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. She's gone from being the underdog. She was also kind of a late bloomer in the sense that she, you know, she didn't make top 100 till maybe she was about 24 or something like that.
Which is really rare for someone to then reach those highs.
Exactly. You know, she obviously always expected to make kind of that level, but she also, you know, she never knew when it was coming. And I guess, you know, once you've done that, you kind of have to reevaluate your goals and things like that. So it was hard, and the pressure she had to deal with and the attention and things like that. It's, you can understand why someone has a drop in that second year. You have points to defend, you know, you're you're at the upper echelons of the game and people are coming after you, which is a different thing that you've ever had before.
Yeah.
So you can understand that, but obviously she's shown this year that she's back to her best or close to her best. And I think Wimbledon is obviously somewhere where she has had success before and she tends to peak for. And I think obviously the Fed Cup earlier in the year was a massive thing for her as well. She gained a lot of confidence. There was a lot of pressure on her to deal with the home support and the chance to take us into World Group 2. And the way she dealt with it was amazing. And I think she gained a lot of confidence from that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we do need to take a break. When we come back, we'll turn our attentions away from the Brits involved in Wimbledon. I did say we'd talk about Rafa and this seeding story. We will do that, and then we'll get kind of Anna's views on who we expect to do well in terms of the singles, the doubles, and all else. Wimbledon chat. We're on for, another 15 or so minutes, on to 8 p.m. this evening for the tennis show here on Love Sport.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
So then, we've had our seedings out for this year's Wimbledon tournament. It's not as straightforward as you'd suspect because Wimbledon, in their own unique way, like to do things a little bit differently, don't they? And Rafa's been booting off. He is world number two, but he is in fact going to be seeded number three at this year's Wimbledon. Why is that? And do you agree with it?
Well, what I don't understand is why they do it slightly differently with the men's and the women's. I think the women's go off just the seeds and what the world ranking is, whereas the guys go off...
I didn't know that. So
yeah, I think it's different.
So the ladies' side of it, they go off the actual world rankings,
yeah.
But the men, they don't.
Yeah, so they go
so
off,
I feel like he's got a right here.
Yeah, I know. I think that's why he kind of kicked up a fuss. But yeah, I'm not really sure why it's different for both of them. Obviously, Rafa is number two in the world, but yeah, seeded three. You can understand why he's a little bit cheesed off.
Yeah. I mean, the main reason why, you know, if people are kind of wondering, well, why is this such an issue for you, is mainly because it means he's going to be on Novak's side of the draw, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's obviously probably the guy he would want to avoid unless he's in the final. But, you know, obviously if he wants to win the tournament, he's going to have to beat the best guy. So whether he has to beat Roger or Novak, you know, it's...
Yeah.
They're both horrible opponents.
Yeah, no, they are. But when you consider on the other side of it, with all due respect to Kevin Anderson, that is an easier side, isn't it?
In theory.
I mean, I know he made the final last year. You don't get world number four by accident. You don't make the Wimbledon final by accident. But yeah, you can understand why he's booted off. Has this happened before in terms of somebody being upset by it? Because I find this incredibly strange. This is the first time I was aware this happens.
Yeah, I had never really heard too much about it, but it obviously is a little bit strange. You know, Wimbledon kind of like to do things differently with like the all white and things like that. And obviously in Wimby Qualies, they're the only ones who play five sets in the last round as well. So they like to do things a little bit differently. But you can understand why Rafa's a little bit annoyed.
So our top 10, by the way, for the men's seeds, you've got Karen Khachanov, number 10. You've got John Isner, Kai Nishikori, Stefan Tsitsipas, Alexander Zverev, Dominic Thiem, Kevin Anderson, Rafa Nadal, Roger Federer, and then Novak is the top seed for the men. So look, going through that, is it, you know, can you really kind of look beyond the obvious Novak, Rafa and Roger?
I mean, I'd probably say just even Novak and Roger. I think going into it, obviously Rafa hasn't played anything on grass, and he's seen in the last couple of years that he's been susceptible in the first couple of rounds. You know, if he plays a big server or a guy with a big game, you know, he's struggled.
Yeah.
So I probably wouldn't say he's one of the favourites, but obviously you can never count an 18-time Grand Slam champion out. But you know, you look at the way Roger obviously played in Halle, winning a 10th title there. Novak always plays well on the grass, so I think it's probably between those two. And then, you know, if Rafa can make second week, then obviously you know he's coming into some form, but I'd probably say it's, you know, between Novak and Roger.
Kyle Edmund, by the way, the only British male seed, he is number 30, which will give him a slight advantage, particularly obviously in the first round. It means obviously he will not face a seed in that first section. But Annette Field, for years, particularly on the women's side of the game, the Williams sisters dominated so much, and there was this need for other people to break through. That has now happened. There, it's kind of being constantly spread around between a whole host of the ladies, and now it's at the point where actually we want a dominant force again in there. But from the flip side with the men, we're now desperate, aren't we, for a Zverev and a team, and even a Tsitsipas or just someone we had Grigor Dimitrov years ago. That was kind of the hope. And again, nobody has quite have they managed to break that top four. I mean, I know that Murray, he's not going to be within that top four now. It has gone down to three. We're desperate now, aren't we, for somebody to throw their hat into the ring and to be a serious Grand Slam. Because, again, Zverev's got all the talent in the world, but he has to do it, doesn't he? He has to produce at some point at a Grand Slam.
Yeah, he's struggled, obviously, in the Slams. He's had a lot of success outside, won a few Masters 1000s, but it just seems that he can't quite make it click at the Slams. I think He just seems to be wasting a lot of energy in the first rounds, you know, going five sets quite often and then sort of running out of gas as he gets to, you know, maybe second, third, fourth round. And that's not what you really need to do. You know, you look at the top guys who are winning slams on a consistent basis, you know, they're getting through the first rounds easy and then kind of working their way into it. Whereas he's kind of a spent force by the time he reaches the fourth round. And then in the women's, it's just so hard to pick. You have no idea who's going to turn up on the day. It's just it's a draw of a hat.
Look, I mean, you're pretty well placed here to give me an expert view on this. Why is this? Because, again, we were saying to Roz earlier, it is near impossible to pick the women's side of it. Don't get me wrong. It's very rarely, you know, a complete wild card. It's always kind of one of the seeds. But you've always got a good idea going into, say, clay. You know who the dominant men's players are. You go into grass, you go into the hardcourt, you know who the dominant players are. On the women's side, you could just never quite be sure on who is the favourite. You can kind of hazard a guess. You can pick four or five names out. But it is so much more difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I honestly wouldn't want to pick who was going to win the women's. You know, you have someone like Osaka who could just hit people off the court. You can have Halep who's going to, you know, just chase every ball down. Same with Kerber and things like that. But then you look at Kvitova and then all of a sudden, you know, you throw Serena Williams into the mix. You know, she's had so much success there. You know, it's, you honestly have no idea with the women's. And I think it's just the way women's tennis has been over the last few years. There doesn't seem to be a dominant force. And I'm not really sure why it is. I wouldn't be able to put my finger on it. It's just no one has been able to be consistent enough. And I think maybe the reason Serena was just because she purely could overpower everyone. You know, no one has got her level of power.
And that's the thing, isn't it? She is just so, so powerful. But again, at times, you know, I cast my mind back. Anna Ivanovic, when she won the French all those years ago, she was like 18 or 19, and we're thinking, well, this is the one. And Muguruza come through. It's had so many times, haven't we, these hopes. You know, at Osaka as well, who's incredibly young. Is it just a matter of power, do you think? Do you think that is why that somebody's not been able to quite, you know, dominate this side of the game?
I think it's also to do with the fact that after winning a slam, there comes so much pressure, and it's just how that person deals with that pressure and the level of expectation and the attention that they suddenly receive. And, you know, all of a sudden they've come from not being an underdog per se, but, you know, not having that level of attention pre-tournament, and then, you know, expecting to make the latter stages and win, and then having to kind of change their whole mentality. So I think it is trickier maybe for the women to, you know, deal with that and put it into perspective, and then just having a good team around you to kind of be able to keep your feet on the ground and things like that. So I don't know whether that's an issue.
No, it's a strange one, isn't it? Bookmaker's dream, though, absolutely the women's side of the game. We spoke about, obviously, Andy and the miracle of his injury and coming back. Must mention Petra Kvitova, seeded number six this year at the tournament. I mean, what it was a horrific story, wasn't it? Was she stabbed in the hand?
Yeah.
Naturally, didn't think she'd probably play again. Not able to kind of grip a tennis racket. But to be world number six or seeded six at Wimbledon, it's an incredible story, isn't it, of kind of strength, determination and just talent.
Yeah, it was a horrendous story what happened to her, and I think everyone was so shocked when the story broke and everyone found out what happened. And I unfortunately have seen a picture of what her hand looked like, and it was horrendous.
We've already done this. I'm not good with this. Don't describe it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't ever want to Google that, because that was just horrendous.
Noted.
But, you know, from seeing that and to what she's been able to do on her comeback is just absolutely phenomenal. And she's a lovely girl, and, you know, it couldn't have happened to a nicer person, the fact that she's been able to come back and have the success that she's had, and, you know, the pedigree that she does have on grass. I think she is going to be one of the favourites if she can just obviously get fit enough to play the tournament, to then, you know, win a few matches. I think she's dangerous, and you know, no one's going to want to face her.
No, absolutely not. So your top 10 seeds, by the way, for the women, you've got Sabalenka, you've got Sloane Stephens, you've got Svitolina, Simona Halep, Petra Kvitova, Angelique Kerber, Kiki Bertens, Karolina Pliskova, Naomi Osaka, and your world number one now is also the Wimbledon number one seed, Ashley Barty. Again, mentioned to Roz earlier, big pressure on her. She's, I don't think, never gone into the second week at Wimbledon. Now she's world number one. Time to step up.
I don't think that would be an issue for her. I think you look at the way she came through at the French Open, like just so cool, calm and collected. I think having that time away from the game, I think was amazing for her. I think it kind of brought her back with a clearer perspective, and you kind of get the impression that she has kind of like an old head on young shoulders, and she can deal with any situation that kind of gets thrown at her. So, and also the way she won Eastbourne as well, Birmingham, sorry. You know, she knew that she could potentially be number one. She won it without dropping a set. It's amazing. Nothing seems to faze her. So yeah. I would be surprised if, you know, the fact that she's number one seed for Wimbledon would faze her.
Right. Incredibly quickly, just two names, men's, women, go.
I hate when you do this.
Sorry, we've got to. I'm not here
no.
next week. Come on.
Oh,
men's.
No. Okay, Novak and Roger. And then for the women.
That was two.
Oh, I don't know.
Come on, I need a name.
Okay, I'll go Pliskova and Kerber.
Right, there we are. Anna, absolute pleasure having you on the Love Sport Tennis Show this evening. We'll be back next week, and as will Johnny Burrow.
This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.